Hi, it's Mike Collins. WFAE is in the midst of its end-of-year fundraising campaign. We're bringing you this podcast without fundraising breaks. But first, I do have a quick pitch before we get to the show. Everything we do at WFAE is paid for by our listeners. Consider supporting Charlotte Talks right now for $20 a month, and we'll send you a Public Radio Nerd t-shirt. Give online at WFAE.org or call 704-549-9000. And thank you for your support. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins on the local news roundup. For the Panthers, the Ron Rivera era comes to an end as owner David Tepper begins making changes. Tepper and the city will have to wait till at least December 17th for Major League Soccer to reveal the home of their 30th expansion team, but it looks pretty good for us. Charlotte City Council swears in three new council members. Mayor Vial Isles begins her second term. She's the first mayor to do that in a while, and candidate filing begins in the same week a panel of state judges OKs recently redrawn maps. Our roundtable of reporters is ready to detail those and other stories, and seated around this table are Steve Harrison, our political reporter here at WFAE News. Welcome, welcome.
Good morning.
Nick Oxner is the chief investigative reporter for WBTV News. Hello to you.
Hidey-ho.
Daniel Shemtob is a reporter for the Charlotte Observer. Do you have any witty repartee this morning?
I don't know if I can top that.
No, you can't. Good morning. And Eric Spanberg is managing editor for the Charlotte Business Journal. Let's say ye.
I'll just give you the standard good morning, Mike.
Thank you. We're all on the radio, also on Facebook Live. It's been a tough season, as we all know, for the Panthers. Franchise quarterback Cam Newton out for all but two games so far this year, and he'll be out for the rest of the year. We have a losing season with four games left. It was inevitable, but I don't think that anybody thought it would happen during the season. But David Tepper decided now was the time to give head coach Ron Rivera his walking papers after the team's fourth consecutive loss.
As much respect as I have for Ron, I think a change was appropriate to build things the way I want things to be built.
So just a week ago, he spoke about not putting up with mediocrity. He told members of the media, "I just can't accept long-term mediocrity." This is just the first shoe to drop, right?
Yeah, and what he has said consistently and what he said again this week is that he inherited, I think he called it a wreck or a mess on the business side, and so he wanted to deal with that first. He wasn't sure how extensive the makeover of the football side would be, and now clearly he's turned his attention to the football side. So you're right, we're going to see a number of other changes, including an assistant general manager will be hired. And look, anytime you have a new owner, he's probably going to want his own coach anyway.
I had not heard that he found a mess on the business side. What does that mean?
The way he defined it was that they were lacking personnel. For example, they didn't have a president on the business side. He said the compensation structure was not appropriate. He said people were scared to make mistakes. And he said that the culture was one that was not willing to take risks or be innovative. And so those were the things that he was addressing.
So why did he act now? Why didn't he wait till after the last game?
He says that other teams are beginning to look around for potential coaches, and he didn't want to start doing that and have Ron Rivera hear about it, but that the Panthers would be at a competitive disadvantage if they waited till the end of the season.
I watched the game last week, and I don't claim to be
prescient. I'm sorry to hear that.
No, I don't claim to be prescient, but you could see on Ron Rivera's face he knew this was it. He knew the end was here, but I don't think he saw it coming quite this soon.
If anything, I thought it would happen at the end of the season, to be honest with you. You know, I know you talked about doing some things differently, and I get that. That's part of the business of owning a football team. And at the end of the day, you know, when you lose football games, when you have a chance to win them, that's a tough pill to swallow.
So the buck stops with the head guy, but was it really his fault, or was he a victim of circumstances? A lot of things going wrong.
I thought it was interesting in Rivera's press conference the day after, he kind of laid out this case. It was almost like he was, I thought, built a decent case why, you know, he kind of laid out what they did, three division titles in 4 years. And then he talked about, look, in this league, when you lose a quarterback, it's really hard to win.
Right.
And he kind of talked about other teams that have gone through, you know, and they've risen again. And I thought it was just interesting. He kind of, it was just like very feel-good press conference in a way. Like there was no, wasn't like.
Yeah. The whole week's been surreal. I mean, this is not standard procedure. Usually when a coach is fired, he storms out. He's not happy. And not that Ron Rivera was happy, but it's not usually followed by a press conference in the team meeting room right. with the backdrop. I mean, that was all unusual. And David Tepper turned emotional when he was asked about the Rivera family and what they had meant to the community. So it was a little bit of a different kind of NFL firing.
Yeah, the whole thing was done with, I think, great sensitivity and respect. And the only time that Ron Rivera got his hackles up, I think, was when he wanted to make sure everybody understood that he is the winningest coach this team has ever had.
You really couldn't find any gear. Interest team had been low. But now, you walk in a grocery store, you can find gear. You walk in a grocery store, you can see people wearing Luke Kuechly's or Christian McCaffrey's or Cam Newton jerseys. And I know I was part of that culture change. I'm proud that I took over a 2-14 team and won back-to-back-to-back NFC division titles, South division titles. Three in a row, okay? Whether you define it by wins or losses or you define it by winning the division, to me, that's 3 years in a row of consecutive winning, okay? So I want to make sure we're straight on that. I get tired of hearing, oh, they couldn't win 3 years in a row, 2 years in a row. No, we won 3 years in a row, so let's get that straight. And we were the first team in the NFC South to do it, so I'm pretty doggone proud of that.
75-63-1 was his record, and I should have pointed out before we played that he was talking about when he arrived here, you couldn't find a lot of Panthers gear on fans around town. And something new has appeared now as Panther gear, and that's the thank you T-shirt that he display. Was he thanking the fans when he put up that T-shirt?
Yeah, and you know, he was known for wearing these T-shirts for different causes and charities and philanthropic causes around town. So that was kind of a last wink and a nod, I think, to the fans.
He was also, Tom Fowler, the Observer sports columnist, wrote that one of the things that he will be remembered for is the fact that he's just a nice guy. And I've met him a couple of times, and he truly is a nice guy, very humble guy. For a guy who, you know, makes a lot of money and has a big, high-profile job, just a nice dude.
Yeah, I wondered, Mike, you know, he got involved with Charlotte Squawks, and was that really kind of when things started
That was the downfall.
Yeah, is that when it started? No, I mean, everybody.
What happened to Pat McCrory?
Wow. Let that be a lesson to you if you make a cameo in Squawks. But no, everybody likes Ron Rivera. The players love him. Obviously, the fans like him. Even media. I mean, a lot of the media people seem sad to see him go. So
there
was
a weird moment when David Tepper was meeting with the press, and he was asked about Ron Rivera and his, you know, how he felt about him, and he kind of said a lot of great things. But then he kind of paused and says, you know, but the next coach, like, I don't remember exactly what he said, but he's like, that'd be nice, but...
But we got to win.
We got to win.
Yeah.
You know, like, I'll hire a jerk if I need to.
Well, so. He also talked about the fact that the NFL has kind of changed the way they structure teams, and Ron Rivera was a defensive coach
Correct.
Guy. And he says that the NFL has gone toward a more of an offensive approach and strengthening the offensive line. So we can, I guess, take from that the next coach will come from that background?
Yeah, I mean, he all but said he's going to look for someone who's going to have more of a wide-open offense. That's not something that Rivera was generally known for. But as Steve says, you know, when you have Cam Newton at his peak, life is much better than when you have a young quarterback.
Plus, the whole offensive line was
yes.
structured around Cam Newton's style of play,
Correct.
Which is only because he's enormous that they could do some of the things that they did. And Kyle Allen is not the same size. Quarterback Cam Newton, speaking of him, has been out for all but two games this season due to a Lisfranc injury on his foot, not his shoulder, but his foot. This week, he announced he'll be having surgery on that left foot. When?
I think, was it March, I think, is he having the surgery? I honestly can't remember.
Okay, it takes 6 to 10.
Too much has happened this week. But,
yeah,
yes, it is in the near future. There are already questions about, since he was declared out for the year, I think, early November, why didn't the surgery happen then? Remember, there have also been questions in the past about his shoulder and delays before he had surgery on his shoulder. And I think the most interesting thing here, Mike, is that maybe you're looking at a Panthers team next year that doesn't have Ron Rivera or Cam Newton.
Yeah. Well, that's going to say, because it takes 6 to 10 weeks to recover. Tepper has said he's going to make no decisions until we know what the outcome of that surgery is, but there's $19 million
right.
hanging in the balance. That's a lot of money. Meanwhile, we have to wait a little longer to find out if we get MLS soccer because they were supposed to make an announcement yesterday. They did not. Now they've moved it, I think, to December the 17th. What does the movement of this announcement, the timing of this, portend?
Well, I think that it's a very gradual process from the MLS standpoint. So what they did was they nudged it forward yesterday by saying we're in, you know, basically final negotiations. And what MLS likes to do is make the ultimate announcement in the city that is getting the new team. So I think that's what this is all about. It's also all about the $100 million that the city will have to kick in to help pay for changes to the stadium and a new team headquarters over at the Eastland Mall site.
And I think one thing that's kind of interesting about the $100 million is that James Mitchell, in one of the council members, his vision for how this will go will be he wants to have a public hearing and then a final vote. Yeah. And the public hearing is kind of funny, right? Because it's like it's important to hear from the public, even though we've already made up our minds. And it will not change anything.
Right.
It's like, but we
right.
want to give
they
everyone
want the
a chance.
Of, yeah, well, I think the problem is everyone knows this has to happen and everyone wants this to happen, but they know it might look bad or might not feel great when it does. And so I think there is some reluctance on the part of the council to wrap their arms around it.
We'll come back and talk more about that, hear from James Mitchell himself, because he said something about the money figure that this is going to be involving. And some city council members are going, wait a minute, not that much. We'll come back and talk about that in a moment. It's Charlotte Talks in the Local News Roundup on WFAE. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, dedicated to those who believe a car should stir one's emotions and deliver a heightened state of driving. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. The sports huddle continues now on our local news roundup. A lot of sports stories this week, and we're talking about all this with Nick Oxner from WBTV News, Eric Spanberger from the Business Journal, Daniel Shemtob with the Charlotte Observer, and Steve Harrison with WFAE News. We were talking just before the break about the MLS expansion. The announcement was supposed to come yesterday. Now they've moved it to December 17th. The league was supposed to meet yesterday afternoon, and in fact, they did. And shortly before that meeting, Mayor Vi Lyles tweeted this. There has been a lot of speculation surrounding the Major League Soccer Board of Governors meeting and the discussion of the league's 30th team. No city staff nor any elected officials are attending those meetings, and any discussions about decisions that may be made at that meeting are premature at this time. If an announcement is to be made, it will happen at the appropriate time. That's a tweet. Go back to 144 characters. Why that tweet at that time?
Well, because all of us in the media around town have been speculating and reporting about all the things that are going on. And by the way, not only is this a poorly kept secret, it's not even a secret because Major League Soccer is talking about it publicly, yeah. openly every day. So,
well, they said this morning that they're in the final, very, right. very, 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 very close discussions about
it. I think it. Yeah. Nick hit the nail on the head. What's going on here is everybody's excited. The city doesn't want to say what it's going to do, in part because they know there's this $100 million decision to be made. And while there is a lot of excitement about soccer, there's also the counterpoint that there are all these needs, affordable right. housing, public safety, and David Tepper's worth $12 billion.
So City Councilman James Mitchell, who we've already referred to, he's the chair of the city's Economic Development Committee, was hoping that the announcement would have come yesterday because he says it would help them to put a process in place that citizens could get behind and support. But he added there are limits on how much City Hall is willing to spend to help upfit Bank of America Stadium for soccer.
Yes, we want it. Yes, it's our number one priority. Yes, you know, I think the votes are there to support it. But I think most of us are comfortable participating with the tourism fund between $100 million and $110 million.
Mm-hmm. Well, Mayor Pro Tem Julie Eisel says, whoa, on that. She said that the prospect of giving a $100 million package for Bank of America Stadium renovations is not correct at all. That's a quote. She said, I don't think it's appropriate. It's like saying, here you go, Mr. Tepper, here's a blank check. And that council is still trying to understand what David Tepper is asking for. Why the confusion? It's clear what he's asking.
We don't
for.
Know because all of the asks and talks about it have been in total privacy.
That's a very good point, Nick. Very good point.
And all of the reporting on this has had to be kind of a paint-by-numbers, piece together what different reporters around town can get.
Is that because this is a negotiation and you don't do negotiations in public?
But I mean, that's what council says. Mm-hmm. But I'll say this. I mean, I've seen a lot of stadium deals and negotiations in other cities. I haven't covered them in closely, but so many of these are in public where the numbers are out there in public. And there's a view on council.
The arena was. The arena here was.
And there's a view on council that if the Panthers, if David Tepper knows how much money they have in their tourism fund, he's going to take it all. That he's entitled to it, and he will just automatically take it. And they seem to not, the council seems to, that seems to be their view, and not that they could just say, like, no, here's what we are willing to give you.
Do we know how much money is in that fund?
Well, that's a good question. Go ahead, Danielle.
That's part of the problem. So we know that there's about $75 million in this one particular, there's like three different revenue streams from the tourism and hospitality taxes. Mm-hmm. We know there's about $75 million in what's called the Convention Center Fund. But as the name suggests, it also goes towards things like improving the convention center. So it's not clear, you know, how much would we have for Bank of America.
And they also want to hold money back for the improvements at the Spectrum Center.
And Discovery Place.
That fund funds a number of things. And so even the council has asked for how much money is actually available from this fund. My colleague David Hodges had a piece this week that highlighted the fact 2 months ago the council asked, hey, how much money is actually here to play? Because remember, there's a convention center project going on right now that's already over budget. The council continues to be surprised by all these big capital projects that continue to come in over budget, or we can't finish like the Cross Charlotte Trail because we run out of money. And so they've asked the council, or they've asked the city staff rather, give us a projection of how much money we're going to lay out from this fund already for the next 5 years, and the city can't answer.
Yeah, but the council asked for that list of Marcus Jones, the city manager, months ago. They still have not received that list. Why not?
Although there was, we reported that there was some type of, and again, this was not public, there was some type of briefing to small numbers of council members right after the election, with some broad general figures presented. Again, we don't know. Still not any actual answers. The other thing that goes on, I think everybody around this table can attest to this, is you'll also hear city staff, when confronted in a meeting, they'll say, well, you know, these are rolling figures. You have things being paid off and coming on, and so we can't really say with certainty, which is a cop-out of an answer.
Yeah. So your colleague, David Hodges at WBTV, who did the story on this, referred to this as a lack of transparency, and usually this is like your bailiwick here.
We hired another guy to give me some support.
Okay, so anyway, the transparency that we usually complain about is the fact that governing bodies are not transparent with the citizens. This is a case of the city that the governing body controls not being transparent to it. Mm-hmm. How do you explain that?
Look, this is an abdication, some could argue, by the city council to the city manager and not challenging him to provide the answers that they are entitled to, but citizens are entitled to. We're talking about a lot of money. We're talking about debt that's been issued that we're going to have to owe on. We're talking about the future of our financial health. And no one seems bothered by the fact that the city manager and the city staff won't or can't give answers about how much of that, you know how much your credit card bills are every month. We don't know how much the city's credit card bills are.
And the other thing that's going on here, and when Ron Kimball was still full-time with the city, city manager, assistant city manager, so on and so forth, he talked about, and I think later as a consultant, talked about, oh, by the way, you're going to have to deal with the stadium. Well, he meant more of what's going on right now, $100 million, give or take. But there's the new stadium, of course, that is in mind with council members and city administrators, and they know that's going to be hundreds of millions of dollars. So there is a lot to sort out. It seems like it would be reasonable to have a public reckoning with what's the strategy here.
And this is I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, the Spectrum Center, they've set aside, a couple years ago, they set aside $25 million for that. That's money they can't really use because the contract between the Hornets and the city says it's a great deal for the Hornets. They says, we have to keep this arena at the top standard of all NBA arenas. So it's like the city, if the Hornets kind of come and say, well, all these arenas now have this, we need it.
Including, so, Steve, if any feature that is in more than half of NBA arenas, they have to add.
Yeah. So they can't, that $25 million, they can't really touch that.
And this is likely to be the first of several requests because, as you point out, if we get the soccer team, they're going to have to change the stadium for camera placement. They want a center tunnel so they can make their entrance. The teams can make their entrance because that's what soccer does. And then there's this idea of having to build yet another stadium.
There will be another stadium.
Yeah, there will be. So yesterday, even though the announcement was supposed to be yesterday about MLS and they put it off, MLS met at 4 o'clock. After that meeting, Don Garber, who's the commissioner, said that the stadium was pretty much the last piece of the puzzle for Charlotte's bid.
Great sports market, great soccer market, and all of that has us very motivated to try to see if we can finalize something. But there is work that remains to be done on the stadium, and that's the work that will be done between now and whenever something can be finalized.
So we're talking about the end of the year, right? Before the end of the year, they're supposed to make this announcement.
Yes.
So this, is the heat on at City Council?
Yes.
Is that what it is?
Yes, absolutely it is. And when you hear a commissioner say something like that, look, these guys aren't dumb. They know how to exert public pressure on local governments. That's exactly what he's doing.
Okay.
And there's only two public meetings left of the council this year.
Speaking of council, they have two. They have three brand new members on City Council. I wonder how they feel about this. They were sworn in on Monday night. Who are they?
Malcolm Graham, who of course had served on council and was a state senator, has also run for Congress. You also have Renee Johnson and you have Victoria Watlington. All three of them are taking district seats because you have LaWanna Mayfield, Greg Phipps, and Justin Harlow either did not win or did not seek re-election.
Right.
And one thing I think it's interesting, LaWanna Mayfield, who, like Eric said, she's not on council anymore. She tweeted, I guess yesterday, the day before, that if she were still on council, she would be a no on the soccer. So I'm not saying that the timing had anything to do with that, but I think it probably is set up for, I would assume, a majority vote. It'll be a very clean
vote. I think it'll be a much
vote.
Safer vote now than with the old council.
Yep.
Yes.
Huh. Because they're all Democrats, these three new members, right?
So correct.
Except for how many? Two Republicans.
Two.
On
yeah, 9-2. It stayed the same.
Okay. Mayor Vi Lyle is also sworn in for her second term, the first mayor to achieve that landmark in quite some time. it's traditional for mayors here to address council on the opening day of the new term, and she did that. She cited transportation and public safety as areas that she intends to concentrate on in this term, and she said that she will be asking for a study of this year's homicides to, quote, determine the neighborhoods most impacted by violence and guns.
We must change the path that we have taken this year. We must change that path.
What else did she say?
She talked also about transit and transportation, forming a citizens committee to study that issue. Again, we've done that several times.
Do we need a study? Seriously, do we need a study to figure out what neighborhoods are impacted by? Why don't you just get out of the police department and look at the police records of the 103 homicides this year? Doesn't that tell you everything you need to know?
Oh, I thought you were asking me about transit. She says
what the mayor
said was that by taking a closer look at this, they could develop other strategies and do things that other cities have done in troubled neighborhoods. She didn't offer a lot of detail, so I don't know much.
So what about the transit study that you?
I was going to say with the transit, we've had a couple of these in the last 10 years for sure, and I think that the mayor is saying that she wants to get a funding plan, because remember, this has been talked about forever, a regional funding plan. Now, whether this group of citizens can help make that actually come about, who knows, but this is the latest attempt.
So crime, of course, is on the minds of a lot of people on council. Returning member Malcolm Graham, and I say returning because he was on council years before and took a step forward to go to the state Senate for a while. But he called violent crime a public health crisis. Republican Tariq Bakari mentioned it, suggested the legislature might want to provide more funding for the courts and other support. Braxton Winston, who became well known prior to his time on council because of his activities surrounding the protests that followed the shooting of Keith Lamont Scott, referred to the problematic intentional policy, quote, carried out by past councils and civic leaders. What does that mean?
He was. Oh, go ahead, Daniel.
Oh, thank you.
Just jump in there. You got to fight for airtime.
So this is talking about, he specifically talks a lot about Brooklyn and the displacement of the Brooklyn neighborhood, but this is really just sort of the general mentality of the government and city council authorized it, although it was a federal program, intentionally displaced this community. It had impacts in terms of, you know, those people went to a lot of the West Side neighborhoods, some of the northern neighborhoods that you now see having poverty and crime. And so he basically says, you know, we were a part of creating these issues, these inequalities that exist today, and so we should be part of addressing the problem.
Would it be safe to say that council is united in their being disturbed by all this crime, but perhaps they have different takes on the causes and how to
Yeah, I think that's a fair way to say it. I think Tart Bakary will be an interesting one to watch because he talked about taking a unified approach and going to Raleigh. And so, Nick, you spend a lot of time with the legislature. That would be really interesting if there was some sort of local coalition that went up there and demanded more court money or whatever else
because
they
part
want.
Of the problem, we've done a show on this or two, part of the problem here with crime is that people get released when they shouldn't be released, and that's because we are woefully understaffed in the court system.
Well, it's for a number of reasons. No one would argue that we're woefully understaffed in the court system, including, interestingly, Republican leadership in the General Assembly, which I was shocked to hear them acknowledge the problem recently. I think Tart Bakary is probably onto something. The city of Charlotte actually has some goodwill in Raleigh, unlike the Jennifer Roberts HB2 days. Vi Lyle's popular amongst Republicans for what she's done with the RNC. Tart Bakary, obviously Republican. This is an approach that, if any approach, you know, could work in Raleigh, this might be one where we could be successful.
And speaking of crime, the police chief has been talking about this forever for obvious reasons, Kerr Putney. But the real story in the last couple months has been his plans to retire at the end of this year, take a couple of months off, and come back and be the chief again for the duration of the Republican National Convention. That ran afoul of the state. Now, I'm told, the city has thrown up its hands.
Yeah, I think they've, the state treasurer had said repeatedly all fall that no, that plan, you can't do it. It violates IRS rules. And the city kind of kept saying, like, wait, I think we could convince you. And he kept saying, no, no, no. And so finally, I talked to the city yesterday, and they've said, yes, it's over. This can't work. So now we have to see what the chief wants to do. Is he going to still retire January 1st and be retired for good? Or will he just continue working?
I mean, really interesting to see what he does, obviously. But then the second thing, beyond the convention, we're just talking about the homicide rate, all these changes coming in terms of public safety approach. The next chief will inherit all that.
We have to go to a break, but it seems it would be important to keep him at least for the convention because of his experience with the Democratic National Convention. Is there any way for them to sweeten the pie for him to stay?
Yes. Yes, there is.
Okay. You want to talk about that when we come back?
Sure.
We'll do that when we come back. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to Mazda's focus to ensure every element of a car is designed around the driver. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. It's the local news roundup. We have people gathered around this table who come here every week just because they like to be here around this table, just this table. We can never change the table. Steve Harrison from WFAE News is here. Nick Oxner from WBTV News. Eric Spanberg, managing editor of the Charlotte Business Journal. And Daniel Shemtov, reporter for the Charlotte Observer. Before we left, we were talking about the police chief and the fact that he cannot do what he wanted to do with his retirement, but what other manipulations we could use that might be possible to use to keep him here through the convention, which that's kind of important because he has experience in that area. And you said there is a way to sweeten the pie, Nick.
Yes, there is we should actually first say, Mike, he has a press conference today at 2 o'clock, where I think we'll know the answer to many of these questions, okay, or at least some of the questions, hopefully. And not only does he have experience, but a lot of his command staff is also retiring this month, the end of this month or early next year, because they're kind of all in the same track that he was. So we're losing several deputy and assistant chiefs as well. So his experience, vitally important as we go into the DNC. There is speculation that the city is able to, if Chief Putney retired when he wanted to, he was eligible for some one-time payout of money, the amount of which I don't recall off the top of my head. And so there is speculation that the city can still pay him that same money in a one-time bonus to keep him to stay, and then it would functionally be the same as if you were retiring now, and right, he retires after the DNC.
So he wouldn't lose the money. Maybe he'd still get the money. They had a groundbreaking of sorts this week at the Charlotte Convention Center. They used sledgehammers instead of shovels because they weren't breaking down. They're knocking down walls. This is a $127 million expansion of that facility. What are they doing to it?
By the way, that comes out of that same pot of money we were talking about earlier. They are adding, I think, about 50,000 square feet of meeting space. They're building a pedestrian bridge that will link the Westin to the convention center. And they're making several of the rooms more flexible. That is, you can divide them in sub- subdivide them. And these are all following trends in the convention and meeting
and
planning.
This is another instance of where this is going to cost more than they originally anticipated, and they know that even before they start the work. The city budgeted $110 million. They now think it's going to cost $127 million, which is about $16.5 million more than projected. Why?
They've basically said that the reason is, and this has actually come up with several projects between, I believe, the county as well, that is that construction costs have been escalating since they approved the funding, which was sometime in 2017.
Okay. This expansion, as you mentioned, includes a pedestrian bridge across Stonewall Street. This is separate from the pedestrian bridge that will cross 277.
Yes, we have many bridges to build.
Is it part of the same route? In other words, if you start in South End and walk across the eventually to be constructed bridge over 277 through the Stonewall stop,
yes,
on the Lynx Blue Line, then you can get on the other pedestrian bridge to go to the Weston.
Yes.
Is that what it's going to
yes.
be? Okay.
We're one big happy railway, trailway thing.
So when will that construction begin? Is it all the beginning at the same time, the bridge construction?
Yeah, they've already started part of the bridge. I think they said by March you'll start to see a lot more visible evidence of that construction. So, yes.
So the Republican National Convention is utilizing the convention center for many things, including the place that they were corral the media in. Will this construction continue through that convention?
They have the option to halt the construction during the convention.
They do.
But we don't know whether or not they're going to use that yet. I mean, I would imagine they would, but
so,
it depends.
So cost overruns there. Another project that has been impacted by cost overruns, Memorial Stadium. Mecklenburg County is now spending $40.5 million to reconstruct the stadium. That's $5.5 million more than originally anticipated. Again, why?
Construction costs.
Well, this original funding was approved in December of 2017. Costs have increased 20% in just 2 years. Is that normal? Was it predictable?
Remember, as Danielle said, it was a recent approval for the convention center project as well. Certainly, construction costs are going up because so much is being built right now. So that is plausible.
Okay. So another groundbreaking this week. Everywhere they're breaking ground. This time in University City, it's a 158,000-square-foot office building being developed by Crescent Communities near the intersection of Prosperity Church and Mallard Creek Roads. What is this project?
Yeah, so this is, like you mentioned, it's an office building, and I think it's significant because, first of all, they've already built several developments around there. So they opened up some apartments nearby, and they're working on a project with another developer on a mixed-use project that's going to have, like, office and retail. There's really just been a huge amount of growth in that area, and this is some of the first office that we've seen there in a while. I know there was a project that they're working on. The other one when it was announced this summer, they said it was the first office building to be added, one of the first office buildings to be added in over a decade over there.
Mm-hmm.
And a developer bought Innovation Park for, I want to say, over $100 million, I can't remember the exact price, a couple months ago as well, and they want to add a hotel, retail shops, so you're just seeing this explosive development there, largely driven by the light rail.
Candidate filing is underway. We're going through a hopscotch now through a lot of topics. Candidate filing is underway for hundreds of elected positions around the state for the 2020 elections. Primary is coming up on March 3rd. There was some concern about whether candidates for Congress would be able to participate because newly drawn maps needed court approval. Well, they got that approval this Monday. Is that right?
That's right.
Does that settle all of the wrangling over political gerrymandering, at least until the next census, which
is for
next
now.
Year?
Yes.
That's it. We're done.
Knock on wood, but it seems to be, yes.
So one of the upshots of these new maps is that North Carolina Senator Tom Tillis, who's running for re-election, may have an unexpected challenger. He had a challenger for the primary who dropped out, a Kerry businessman, but now this new person is Mark Walker, who is a three-term House veteran. Why is he thinking about taking on the senator?
His new congressional district in the maps that were approved on Monday gets significantly less favorable for a Republican and for him. So there's talk and speculation that he's considering a primary challenge to Tom Tillis. He had some polling done. He's also considering a primary challenge to fellow Republican Congressman Ted Budd in a neighboring district whose new redrawn district includes about half of Mark Walker's old district.
Okay.
And the Garland Tucker, the candidate, the Raleigh businessman who was running against Tillis and who dropped out because he said he couldn't raise money, he's you know, kind of basically encouraging Mark Walker to run against Tillis and says, you know, I will support the most conservative candidate in the race. I believe Mark Walker is far more conservative than Tom Tillis. So Garland Tucker certainly egging him on.
Okay. So the state legislative maps have also been under scrutiny all of this year, but finally a panel of North Carolina judges ruled that these new maps drawn by Republican legislators earlier this or last month, I guess, can be used in the elections next year. Does that mean that GOP map drawers did a good job of drawing these maps, or in the court's opinion, or just simply we're running out of time, so let's just use them?
No. They approved the maps. The court, in ordering the legislative districts be redrawn, they said you must do it in public. You must use this as a baseline. You must do these things, steps to make sure that these maps are significantly more fair than their predecessors. And the court ruled, we think you have met all of these criteria, and there it was.
To the point that you could actually watch it being, it was streamed, that yes. You could yeah. watch them looking at the numbers and the maps. And
I bet you it made for riveting television.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
We're all going to be using new electronic voting machines in 2020. And WBTV reported this week that the State Board of Elections is taking a closer look at the machines they plan on buying because that same company's machines were used in Pennsylvania, and they had a little vote counting kerfuffle up there with those machines. What's that all about?
Little and kerfuffle are good ways
Thank
to
you.
Call it, Mike. Yes, there was a
kofefe, if you will.
a judicial race in Pennsylvania. I'm
a golden oldie there.
a judicial race in Pennsylvania where a candidate was had a significant undercount of votes, miscount of votes, of people who had cast their ballots for the candidate, and the ballots didn't tally or tabulate. First thing, that is a slightly different machine. It's the XL version of the machine that we're considering buying that's been certified to use here in North Carolina. And the folks here say, well, that was just a software programming error on the part of the people in Pennsylvania that wouldn't happen here.
Okay. And that's why they're confident it's not going to happen here. Do these leave a paper trail, these machines?
They mark a paper ballot. The interesting thing, though, is State Board Vice Chair Stella Anderson is concerned now because the company says it only has like 500 of these machines that have been certified here, and they want the State Board to certify these other additional machines so that they can sell us a different crop of machines for 2020.
So, great. you did some reporting this week, Nick, on about children of wartime veterans, including those whose parents were killed or injured in combat, who are scrambling to repay money and adjust budgets for their schooling because the North Carolina Department of Military and Veterans Affairs slashed state-funded scholarships before semester's end. Why?
There's really no reason for this. This is unacceptable. Let's start the conversation with that. There's a scholarship. It's awarded to hundreds of students every year. It currently pays for about 1,100 students to go to school. It includes tuition and room and board. Last week, the week before leading up to Thanksgiving, students found out that the state was cutting in half its room and board allowance as part of this scholarship. And the schools had already credited the students the full amount that the state was expected to pay. And so now students are on the hook for having to pay back $1,300 amidst finals and at the end of the semester. The Department of Military and Veterans Affairs says they didn't get all the money it needed from the General Assembly. However, the General Assembly has a recurring appropriation of $9.1 million. They only spent $4 million on the first semester last year. There are fewer students in the scholarship program this year than last year. Yeah. There is absolutely no reason the state couldn't have paid the scholarship.
So these kids are on the hook for this money after they've already gone through the semester
Correct.
That they're owing the money for.
Correct.
These scholarships, as I understand them, are authorized under state law for students attending public universities in North Carolina. How can they turn around and cut these funds legally?
Because originally the state didn't pay this money at all. They said the General Assembly didn't pass a budget, so we don't have money. That was wrong. The nonpartisan fiscal research staff said that's incorrect. Pay the funds. Now they've come back and said, well, this is all we're going to pay. And the schools are saying, well, we already gave you more than, you know, the double amount that we thought we were going to get this semester. Luckily, the Board of Governors chairman yesterday tells me in a statement that they're telling the schools to not hold the students responsible for this.
Today is wedding day for BB&T and SunTrust. The $66 billion merger to be consummated today will result in the birth of Truist, That was fast. No gestation period at all. What will happen today in this merger?
So it will be end of today. So really starting Monday morning, it will be Truist Bank. And this is a big step forward for the merger that's going to have be based in Charlotte and have 2,000 employees uptown.
And if you recall, and I'm sure you do, when the Truist name was announced last year or earlier this year, the Treliant Federal Credit Union folks got a little upset because they see this as infringement on copyright.
A Truist statement, yes.
Yes, and BB&T and SunTrust countersued. So what happens with all that? What's going on with that?
It's still ongoing. So actually, BB&T and SunTrust just kind of filed their response and denied all the claims, asking to have it be dismissed, which is very common for, you know, lawsuits right. filed against you. So that is still ongoing. And Treliant actually wants the profits made via the Truist brand as compensation for monetary damages.
That'll happen.
So once that starts on Monday, they're going to, yeah, well.
Well, don't put up the signs over the weekend.
Yeah.
That's the lesson to be learned there. Daniel Shemtob's reporter for the Charlotte Observer. Eric Spanberg joined us from the Charlotte Business Journal. Nick Oxner, chief investigative reporter from WBTV News, and Steve Harrison from WFAE News. Thank you all for the hour. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to drivers that share Mazda's passion that cars make driving matter. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.